Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to episode 49 of Destination Disaster. I am your host, Devin Carney. With hurricane season rapidly approaching us here on the east coast of the United States, I wanted to take some time to cover one of the costliest storms that has impacted the United States in, quite honestly, the last century. This week, we are covering Hurricane Ian. This storm would reach a maximum strength of Category 4, maximum sustained winds of 155 miles per hour, cause $113 billion in property damage, and would ultimately claim 160 plus lives. This hurricane is the third costliest disaster and is the deadliest hurricane to strike the state of Florida since 1935. My goal for this episode this week is to show you just how dangerous hurricanes can be and why it is so utterly important to heed all relevant warnings that are provided by meteorology officials and by local emergency management personnel with regard to evacuations and life safety measures. This hurricane provides a modern look at a true worst-case scenario in terms of major hurricane impacts. Please, if you take nothing else from this episode, listen to those who are in positions that are vital to public safety and heed warnings that are provided. On September 14th, 2022, a tropical wave would form off the western coast of Africa, bringing with it thunderstorms and conditions conducive for a formation. The tropical wave would continue to move in a westerly direction, slowly gaining strength. By September 23rd, the tropical wave was located off the northern coast of South America, where upper-level winds from Hurricane Fiona inhibited development at first. However, later in the day, Tropical Depression 9 was officially designated. From there, the storm turned northward where it began to enter increasingly warmer waters in the Gulf of Mexico. By September 27th, Hurricane Ian was now a strong Category 3 system and struck the western tip of Cuba with maximum sustained winds of 125 miles per hour. The Pinar del Rio province in Cuba experienced the full force of Hurricane Ian as the system only slightly weakened as it made landfall. Ian made its way back into the warm waters and began to initiate an eyewall replacement cycle. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this term, these cycles naturally occur in intense tropical cyclones, generally with winds greater than 185 kilometers per hour or 115 miles per hour, or major hurricanes Category 3 and above. When tropical cyclones reach this intensity and the eyewall contracts or is already sufficiently small, some of the outer rain bands may strengthen and organize into a ring of thunderstorms, a new outer eyewall that slowly moves inward and robs the original inner eyewall of its needed moisture and angular momentum. Since the strongest winds are in a tropical cyclone's eyewall, the storm usually weakens during this phase, as the inner wall is choked by the outer wall. Eventually, the outer eyewall replaces the inner one completely, and the storm may re-intensify. Hurricane Ian, however, did not weaken, instead gained additional strength as it impacted the Dry Tortugas during this time. Following this eyewall replacement cycle, Ian reorganized into a very strong Category 4 storm, with maximum sustained winds of 155 miles per hour. By this point, Hurricane Hunter air crews had flown multiple missions into Ian, gathering additional information and learning further about the strong system. During one of the last missions prior to landfall in Florida, crew aboard the aircraft identified wind gusts as strong as 217 miles per hour and a central pressure of 936 millibars. At around this time, NOAA sensors measured wind gusts reaching up to 216 miles per hour or 348 kilometers per hour. Ian maintained its intensity for several hours before weakening slightly as it approached the coast of Florida, although it remained a Category 4 hurricane. At approximately 3:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Ian made landfall on Cayo Costa, Florida, with sustained winds of 150 miles per hour or 240 kilometers per hour and an estimated central pressure of 940 millibars. Becoming the first Category 4 hurricane to impact southwest Florida since Charley in 2004, which made landfall at the same location. Ian would then make a second landfall just south of Punta Gorda, Florida, near Pirate Harbor, about an hour and a half later, with maximum sustained winds of 145 miles per hour or 230 kilometers per hour. From this point, Hurricane Ian would quickly degrade from major hurricane strength to tropical storm strength due to a process known as frictional displacement. Tropical Storm Ian would then move off the northeastern coast of Florida, where conditions would allow for strengthening once again. Hurricane Ian would develop back into a Category 1 hurricane, setting its aim on the South Carolina coast, where the storm would develop into a Category 2 hurricane prior to making landfall near Georgetown, South Carolina. From here, Ian would weaken quickly, being further carried inland by strong upper-level jets, and finally being ripped apart over Virginia by a strong polar jet on October 2, 2022. Quite a hell of a storm, huh? Well, this doesn't even begin to outline the catastrophic damage that we are going to cover. Before we jump into that, if you are enjoying this episode and enjoy the show overall, please be sure to give the show a like, rating, and leave a comment if there's something that either I'm missing or that you'd like to see. Let me know. I write, produce, record, and edit this show on my own, so there is some stuff that I may miss. What we are going to do from this point is discuss the preparations taken and what the impact resembled in each location where Hurricane impacted. This way we aren't continuously jumping around and can identify problems if officials did not prepare or did not issue life-saving measures early enough. As Hurricane Ian approached the western region of Pinar del Rio in Cuba, officials undertook several efforts to protect both life and crops in the region. Evacuation orders for roughly 50,000 people were issued well in advance of the impact, and government departments took further action to protect food and crops stored in warehouses throughout the region. As Ian made landfall, a maximum gust of 129 miles per hour was recorded. Total rainfall over a 24-hour period was recorded to be 4.3 inches or 108.3 millimeters. Storm surge inundation occurred along the coast, impacting Isla de la Juventud. Five people were killed in Cuba. A man in San Juan E. Martinez, who was electrocuted while disconnecting a wind turbine used for irrigating his field, a 43-year-old woman who died when one of the walls of her house collapsed, two state technicians who were working on repairing breakdowns caused by Ian, and a fifth person of unknown cause. In the region most impacted by Ian, power was cut to the entire region, where a population of 850,000 people. As Ian traveled back into the Gulf of Mexico, where he strengthened further, the wheels of preparation began turning all along the southern coast of the United States. On September 24th, the Florida governor issued a state of emergency for the entire state, with President Joe Biden accepting the declaration. One thing that I haven't talked about in a while is the Waffle House scale. And if any of you live in a portion of the United States that has a Waffle House, you will know exactly that these restaurants typically don't close for any natural disaster impact. And when they do, it's serious. Prior to landfall, many counties that were in the warned area opened up schools and public shelters for those who either had nowhere to evacuate to or those without means to evacuate. Mandatory evacuation orders were issued for parts of multiple counties. Around 300,000 people were evacuated in Hillsborough County, which centers on Tampa, with schools and other locations being used as shelters. Before the impact, school closures and mandatory evacuations were made across much of the Florida Peninsula. However, there is one county that I want to cover that delayed their decision to issue evacuation orders only 24 hours ahead of the storm. This could have mitigated the amount of losses that this one county sustained following the impact. Lee County, Florida is located in the southwest portion of Florida, containing the barrier island of Sanibel Island, Cayo Costa, where Ian made initial landfall, and the city of Fort Myers. Emergency management officials delayed their decision to order evacuations only 24 hours prior to Hurricane Ian making landfall. Many are looking at a decision by officials in Lee County to delay ordering a mandatory evacuation until Tuesday, September 27th, the day before the hurricane made landfall. That was more than a day after the National Hurricane Center warned a life-threatening storm surge up to 7 feet could hit the county. At a press conference, County Manager Roger Desjarlais said, "We did consider calling for an evacuation yesterday, but given the uncertainty of the path, the timing just wasn't right." Hurricane Ian was a massive system, with hurricane winds extending 30 miles from its center, meaning that even if the track of the storm had shifted, the residents in Lee County faced a deadly threat. When it comes to a storm of this size, it no longer matters where the track is trending, only that you get your residents out of harm's way as fast as possible. Due to this delay, 72 deaths were reported in Lee County. As Hurricane Ian continued to batter southwest Florida, Too with this storm came a devastating storm surge of between 10 and 15 feet, flooding many of the communities that dotted that area. In Lee County, the damage was catastrophic and was most attributed to flooding. Combined with high winds, this resulted in damage to 52,514 buildings and homes, which included minor damage to 16,314 structures, major damage to 14,245 structures, and the destruction of 5,369 others. A preliminary estimate placed building damages at $6.8 billion. A large portion of the Sanibel Causeway collapsed and washed away during the storm, cutting off all vehicle access to Sanibel. Vehicular access to the island was reestablished on October 11th for emergency workers, and public access was reestablished on October 21st for local residents. One reason for the catastrophic damage in Lee County is due to decades of residential development and destruction of natural barriers such as mangroves. Since the 1950s, developers have removed mangroves and filled in wetlands to make room for residential development. The loss of these natural buffers, both of which can absorb wave energy and protect land areas from behind them, combined with the dredging of more than 640 kilometers, or about 400 miles, of canals, allowed water to advance more rapidly and penetrate deeper inland. Elsewhere in Florida, damage varied, with coastal communities taking the brunt of the impact. As Ian moved eastward, heavy rainfall and winds led to building damage and further flooding. Moving back into the Atlantic, Hurricane Ian re-strengthened into a Category 1 storm, prompting Georgia Governor Brian Kemp to activate the State Operations Center on September 26th. Farmers throughout the state of Georgia turned their irrigation systems off to allow the soil to dry and prevent inundation, and harvested as many crops as possible to prevent entire fields from being lost. In South Carolina, officials geared up for a direct impact, with Governor Henry McMaster issuing a state of emergency and activating the state's emergency operations plan for the state. By 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on September 30th, over 210,000 customers had lost power in the state from the hurricane. A tidal gauge at Spring Maid Pier in Myrtle Beach reached 10.77 feet, or 3.28 meters, beating the record of 9.8 feet, or 3 meters, set by Hurricane Isaias, which struck 2 years prior. As of 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on October 1st, an estimated 63,000 customers remained without power, primarily in Horry, Georgetown, Charleston, Florence, Williamsburg, and Berkeley counties. Luckily, no deaths were recorded as a result of this hurricane impact. Now, following the impact and the clearing conditions, the process of responding to and aiding those directly affected began. Immediately following Hurricane Ian's transition back out to sea, first response agencies, volunteer organizations, and utility companies from non-affected areas mobilized and deployed into the affected regions in Florida. The 5,000 mobilized National Guard soldiers deployed to the affected areas, helping to clear debris, provide supplies, and aiding in further search and rescue operations. In addition to the National Guard providing emergency aid, we see another important group being utilized, and that is the Community Emergency Response Teams, CERT for short. These are groups of volunteers trained in various emergency response skills such as basic first aid, triage, damage assessment, basic search and rescue, and communications. These are typically city-level volunteers with the ability to be activated by the city to either assist in shelters or on the ground in various neighborhoods, obtaining and sharing important information to the Emergency Operations Center. Many of these individuals are trained in other skills and have some form of background, such as EMS, military, and other vital skills that can be utilized so that first responders are able to aid in the more critical cases early on post-disaster impact. Now, as I stated in the beginning of this episode, the damage caused by this storm totaled over $100 billion, forcing thousands from their homes and entire communities to rebuild. Hell, some communities are still in the process of recovery to this very day. This storm truly shows a worst-case scenario when it comes to hurricanes here in the United States. If you can only take one lesson away from this episode, that should be to listen to emergency officials when evacuations are ordered. If you don't have the means, please reach out to local shelters or even ask local aid organizations to see if they can help transport you out of harm's way. I want to thank you all for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to leave a like, follow, and comment. If you want a topic covered that I haven't covered yet, send your suggestions to destinationdisastertopics@gmail.com. We are only one episode away from the Big 5-0, so please keep your eyes out for when that episode drops, because it's going to be one hell of an episode. Until next time, this has been Destination Disaster.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.